Hello, and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson, and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. And produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 802 for release on Sunday, July 7th, 2024. On WaveScan today, Radio Luxembourg, the early history, part 2. New transmitters for Radio Exterior de España. And the Japan DX report.
On 208 meters in the medium wave band, this is your station of the stars, Radio Luxembourg.
This is Radio Luxembourg, the great 208, the ringing, swinging station of the stars.
Last week, Ray Robinson reviewed some of the early history of Radio Luxembourg in Europe, specifically the year it first launched, 1933. Now, in the second part of this story, here's Ray again, continuing from January 1934.
Thanks, Jeff. The 1933 Lucerne plan of long, medium, and shortwave frequency allocations for radio stations in Europe became effective at 11 p.m. UK time on Sunday, January the 14th, 1934. All over the continent, during the early hours of Monday the 15th, stations were adjusting their transmitters to comply with the new frequency allocations. The Grand Duchy of Luxembourg, as we mentioned last week, had not been granted a long-wave channel due to the small size of the country, and had only been assigned one medium-wave channel instead. But when Compagnie Luxembourgeoise de Radiodiffusion, CLR, opened transmissions of Radio Luxembourg that Monday, to many listeners' surprise, they found the station had moved not to the medium-wave frequency that had been allocated, but to 1304 meters, 230 kilohertz, long-wave. This was a channel which under the new plan was allocated to Warsaw, Poland. As you can imagine, this gave rise to yet more charges of piracy, even as the station continued to become more successful commercially. It was also the 1933 Lucerne plan which reallocated the channel used by the BBC National Programme from 1554 metres to 1500 metres, 200 kHz, which, give or take the minor adjustment that occurred in 1978 to 198 kHz, is the same channel on which it has operated for 90 years and continues to do so to this day. Well, immediately after implementation of the Lucerne plan, chaos from interfering stations on both the long-wave and short-wave bands was noted by listeners. Stations in a number of countries had refused to comply for various reasons, and a follow-up conference was needed to iron out the problems. This was held in Geneva in late February 1934, and again the government of Luxembourg sent its delegates. On Friday the 2nd of March, it was announced in Geneva that a, quote, pact for peace on the air, unquote, had been reached by experts from 15 countries, including Luxembourg. The agreement involved the changing of more than 12 long and short wavelengths in 10 countries, including the wavelengths for Radio Paris, which had been interfering with the BBC, and Radio Luxembourg. Notwithstanding that announcement, however, it was actually Radio Warsaw that decided to shuffle down the band slightly, from 1304 metres to 30 kHz to 1339 metres to 224 kHz. Although that was still not enough to provide 9 kHz separation to avoid interference completely, both were high-power stations, and it was reported that adjacent channel splash was barely noticeable if the listeners off-tuned their wireless slightly. During 1934, the International Broadcasting Company, which had been buying time for sponsored programmes on Poste Parisienne and Radio Normandy, began similarly buying time on Radio Luxembourg, which helped it expand its broadcast schedule considerably. The station more than doubled its output from 40 hours a week in 1933 to 87 hours a week by 1935, and then grew to 104 hours a week in 1936. Radio Luxembourg remained on 1304 metres for quite some time. Programme listings from April and May 1935, more than a year after the Geneva Conference, showed the station was still on 1304 metres, at that time with programming in English on Sundays from 7:45am to 12 midnight, and during the rest of the week from 12 noon to 11pm. Then later programme listings from 1938 show that by that time, Radio Luxembourg had changed frequency once more, moving up the dial slightly from 1304 metres to 30 kHz to 1293 metres to 232 kHz. This then put an 8 kHz gap between them and Warsaw on 1339 metres to 224 kHz, which was enough to end the adjacent channel interference. And 232 kHz was the frequency on which the long-wave transmitter in Luxembourg remained until the new band plan in 1978 required an adjustment to 234 kHz. One of the first announcers on Radio Luxembourg was Charles Maxwell, who first went out to the Grand Duchy in 1936. Here he is speaking about his early recollections in a documentary about the station that was broadcast in 1974.
I can remember when I went out first for a week. I went out as a relief announcer for a week, and they paid me £10 a day for 1 week. And I thought, this is marvellous. This is real money. Up till then, I'd been in the theatre earning very little money. Oh, I went out for a second week. Again, at, if I remember right, £10 a day. And, oh yes, and my hotel expenses paid. So really, it was money for old rope. But no, when I went out finally on a contract, it was, in fact, £10 a week. When I first arrived in Luxembourg, Luxembourg was broadcasting for the whole of Sunday. By the whole of Sunday, I mean from 8 in the morning until midnight. You must remember that in these days, of course, the BBC had no light entertainment on a Sunday. It was a very solemn affair, the BBC Sunday, in Sir John Reith's day, and Luxembourg were doing programmes with all the big stars, Gracie Fields, George Formby, people of that note.
I'd like to sing to you. Some of them are very old and some of them are new.
On weekdays, we were on the air from 8 until about 10 in the morning. Then we didn't come on the air again till the early evening. Again, only, I think, for about an hour and a half or 2 hours. When I first arrived in Luxembourg, I remember being a very tired young man. There was no question of flying to Luxembourg in these days. I'd come the long way round by sea and train overnight, and was on the air, I seem to remember, within about an hour of arriving in Luxembourg, with the very first programme being a Bile Beans programme. The business of getting the records over was quite a job. I say records because in the early days, all the programmes were on records, some of them on these very large 16-inch records. And all the programmes for the week would be sent on a Saturday from London, flown to Brussels, put on a train in Brussels, arrive in Luxembourg on a Saturday evening, and the other announcer and myself would have to go to the station, collect these boxes, take them up to the studios, the same studios that are being used today, and sort them out. Apart from the sponsored programmes, of course, there were a great many requests came in for records, and we had a pretty vast library, and I should think that probably the most popular artist who was being asked for in these days was Bing Crosby. So perhaps this might be an appropriate moment to have a Bing Crosby record.
When skies are cloudy and gray, they're only gray for a day.
And if you're wondering why he couldn't fly direct to Luxembourg, it was because there wasn't any airport there. The first small grass airfield in Luxembourg wasn't opened until the late 1930s. When war broke out on September 3, 1939, all private stations in France were ordered to close by the government. Radio Luxembourg was taken over by the Luxembourg government for a few more weeks for special news programming, but advertising revenue had stopped completely, so it was decided the station should close also, which it did on Friday, September 22, 1939. Early in 1940, an enterprising engineer at the transmitter site decided to bury four high-power amplification tubes from the transmitter in an adjacent field to prevent them being used by the Germans and in case they should be needed again after the war. Nazi German forces eventually overran Luxembourg in May 1940 and took control of the Radio Luxembourg studios and transmitter site. They managed to reactivate the transmitter and in July 1940 began using it for their own propaganda broadcasts by William Joyce, who was known by British listeners as Lord Haw Haw, and others. Radio Luxembourg remained under the control of the Germans until early September 1944, when the advancing American forces entered and liberated the city of Luxembourg. Before the Germans withdrew, they attempted to destroy the station. Their attempt failed, but they did do severe damage. The engineer who'd buried the transmitter tubes in the field adjacent to the transmitter site in 1940 dug them up again, and the station was quickly refurbished. Sadly, Radio Normandy over on the coast at Fécamp was totally destroyed during the D-Day landings on June the 6th, 1944, and it was never rebuilt. Radio Luxembourg was to be the only continental broadcaster of English-language commercial programmes which survived into the 1940s and 50s. In early 1945, under US Army control, the Luxembourg transmitter was used on a different frequency and with only 50 kilowatts to broadcast black propaganda programming into Germany, pretending to be a German station. The station identified in German by its wavelength as "Hello, this is 1212 calling," on 1212 meters. William Joyce was captured and after the war he was tried for treason and hanged at Wandsworth Jail in London in January 1946. Control of Radio Luxembourg was returned to the Luxembourg government and then to CLR. In February 1946, sponsored programmes were back on the air, and in the summer of that year, English programmes were heard once again on 1293 metres. A small British staff worked wonders with records that had remained hidden during the German occupation. They were very much out of date, but at least they told the listeners, Radio Luxembourg is back on the air. The long-wave transmitter continued to carry English-language programming until the new Copenhagen Band Plan of 1949 went into effect. In that plan, Luxembourg was also allocated 208 metres medium-wave, 1439 kHz, and the station decided to use the long-wave frequency exclusively for French-language programming. From July 2, 1951, the medium-wave channel became the home for all German-language programming during the daytime and English-language programming during the evenings, from 7:45pm to 3am UK time. There was also a short block of programmes in the early evening in Italian and Dutch, after the German programmes closed. Shortwave transmissions were also introduced, with the French programming being relayed on 15350 kHz and the daytime German programming on 6090 kHz. During the evenings on 6090, religious programming was carried in various languages up until midnight, followed by a relay of the last 3 hours of the regular English language programming. The English service ended on the 30th of December 1992, with the medium-wave channel then carrying German-language programming only, until the transmitter was finally turned off for the last time on the 31st of December 2015. Radio Luxembourg in French is still heard on FM stations throughout France and on various digital platforms, but the long-wave broadcasts on 234 kHz were discontinued on January 2, 2023 at midnight UTC. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray. Next week, Ray will be bringing us the intriguing and little-known story of how an early offshore radio station ended up in Hawaii in 1931. Reverend Martin Dawson in Canada heard our item last week about emergency radios, and he has an interesting observation. He says, I'm presently listening to Wave Scan on 15770 kHz here in Prince Edward Island, Canada. You listed possible shortwave emergency radios in response to a question from a listener in Florida. Well, here on our island, we have had two tropical storms or hurricanes in the past 3 years, Dorian and Fiona. I've used the Cato Voyager emergency radio on both occasions. The electrical power, cell phone service, and internet were all ill-affected. Thank goodness for analog radio. Well, thanks for that news item, Martin. We checked on Amazon.com and found the Cato Voyager for about $50 U.S. It's described as a solar power dynamo crank, wind-up emergency AM, FM, shortwave, NOAA weather alert radio with flashlight, reading lamp, and cell phone charger. So, there's a good, inexpensive option for an emergency radio with shortwave coverage from 3.2 to 22 megahertz on two shortwave bands. There's also a Cato Voyager Pro available that has even a few more bells and whistles and digital readout for about $90. This one even has a calendar, an alarm clock with dual settings, a sleep timer, thermometer, and humidity meter. Sounds like it does everything except make coffee for you. By the way, NOAA Weather Radio from the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration sounds like this.
These are the 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time conditions across southeast Florida. At Miami, partly sunny. Temperature 88 degrees. The dew point 75, and the relative humidity 65%.
I asked Martin Dawson if Canada has NOAA weather alerts like we have here in the United States. He replied, Canada does have a weather system that is part of NOAA. Here on Prince Edward Island, it broadcasts out of Charlottetown in both English and French. People mainly rely on local weather stations on television or FM radio, as most people do not have NOAA band radios. The aforementioned Cato Voyager does have that capability. Regular AM radio is non-existent here on the island, except for skip during the nighttime from off-island, including the USA. You're listening to WaveScan from Adventist World Radio. Tracy Wood forwards an item to us indicating that the Board of Directors of Radio Televisión Española has unanimously approved the purchase, installation, and startup of a new shortwave transmitter. The first of five new transmitters that they say Radio Exterior de España needs urgently to guarantee the continuity of this public service. The new transmitters will replace the current equipment, which they say has far exceeded its useful life and whose frequent breakdowns put the continuity of shortwave transmissions at risk. Specifically, they'll be used for transmitting the shortwave signal to West Africa, the Middle East, North America, and South America. Corporation's action comes after years of uncertainty. In 2014, REE Shortwave was closed for a time. It was in 2018 when it was possible to return to broadcasting 8 hours a day on shortwave. With this decision, RTVE said it's complying with its public service obligation, which establishes that the corporation must aim to serve the broadest audience, ensuring maximum continuity and geographical and social coverage, with a commitment to offer quality, diversity, innovation, and ethical demands. REE's shortwave carries the voice and vision of Spain to the entire world. For this reason, the station director, Luis Manuel Fernandez Iglesias, has advocated before the board of directors of RTVE for involving the ministries of foreign affairs and culture of Spain in the future of Radio Exterior, both in the design of its programming as well as the financing of this international public radio station. A news release from RTVE adds, as seen in the invasion of Ukraine, shortwave escapes control and censorship, guaranteeing the democratic right to truthful and honest information. Another of its advantages is that it is free for listeners and the low cost and investment required for its reception anywhere, circumstances that make it very attractive, especially for fishermen, merchant sailors, missionaries, or Spanish volunteers who carry out their work where the internet signal does not reach.
Radio Exterior de España.
English Language Service.
An article in the Spanish daily El Diario on June 26th has more information about REE. It reads in part, shortwave broadcasts in Spanish and Russian from Radio Exterior de España, the international channel of Radio Nacional de España, reach Ukraine and Russia. RTVE explained that the Russian attack on the Kyiv communications tower has silenced several television channels, and the internet and social networks are easily controllable and the telecommunications infrastructures that provide internet service are very vulnerable to a strike. RTVE pointed out that Radio Exterior de España's shortwave broadcasts in Spanish and Russian can be easily received with affordable receivers, and it's not possible to control who's listening to them, unlike online radio broadcasts. Radio Exterior de España transmits its programming on shortwave from its broadcasting center in Noblejas to Ukraine and Russia in Spanish from 1600 to midnight UTC, and in Russian from 1800 to 1830 UTC.
Radio Exterior de España.
Вещание на русском языке. Здравствуйте, из мадридской студии микрофон Алексей Ершов. За звукорежиссерским пультом мне сегодня помогает Хавьер Лопес.
RTVE highlighted on June 26th that REE escapes the blockage that Russia has imposed on broadcasting and internet access to 81 European media outlets, including those of RTVE and three other Spanish media. REE's shortwave power, it says, guarantees the right to information throughout the world, despite the attempts at censorship and manipulation by some totalitarian leaders. This is possible thanks to the shortwave service that allows transnational coverage to be provided without the possibility of interference. Transmissions from the Noblejas Broadcasting Center can reach distances much greater than 4,000 kilometers. In this way, REE's shortwave passes over borders, political barriers, and government restrictions. Radio Televisión Española pointed out that the Russian invasion of Ukraine has revitalized shortwave, and specifically Radio Exterior de España's Russian-language broadcast to Eastern Europe. RTVE highlighted that the advantages of shortwave lie in the fact that its broadcasts are open, without subscription, without a trace of data, and without the possibility of being monitored by enemies of freedom of expression, and that with simple and affordable receivers, you can receive this radio service in critical conditions anywhere on the planet. And that was part of an article published by the Spanish newspaper El Diario.
De norte a sur, de este a oeste, en los cinco continentes, derribando fronteras.
Llega tu español herejía, emisión separada.
Radio Exterior.
Hola, es cuarta-feira.
Radio Nacional de España en el mundo.
Now to Japan, here's Yukiko Tsuji.
Welcome to the DX Report of the Month from Japan Shortwave Club, edited by Toshi Otake, and I'm Yukiko Tsuji. We have several DX reports from our club members this week. Adventist World Radio from Guam was heard on 12060 kHz on June 2nd from 1530 with interval signal to the sign-off at 1600 UTC in English. SIO rating was 454. WaveScan Japan DX News was broadcast at 1552. Radio New Zealand Pacific was heard on 9700 kHz on June 1st from 1100 to 1140 UTC in English. SIO rating was 454. After a time signal, news was aired. Then Saturday Night Music Show was broadcast, featuring live performance by the Rolling Stones. Voice of Vietnam was received on 11885 kHz on June 5th from 1930 to 2000 UTC in French. SIO rating was 353. Jingle and ID were aired. Then news and commentary with interviews were broadcast. BBC World Service via Oman was heard on 6150 kHz on June 4th from 1759 to 1810 UTC in Peshitto. SIO rating was 454. News started following the time signal. Radio Azadi via Kuwait was received on 15090 kHz on June 8th from 1250 to the sign-off at 1330 UTC in Dali. SIO rating was 353. Talk program and music were on the air. ID was given at 1328. The parallel frequency was 17880 kHz. Vatican Radio was heard on 11870 kHz on June 4th from the sign-on at 1959 with interval signal to the sign-off at 2027 UTC in English. SIO rating was 353. Jingle and ID were given at 2000. Then church news and news panorama were broadcast. KBS World Radio via Ascension was heard on 9765 kHz on June 2nd from the sign-on at 2000 to 2030 UTC in French. SIO rating was 353. ID was given at 2000. Then talk program by a male announcer and K-pop music were aired. KBS started using Ascension Relay from June 1st. KNLS from Anchor Point, USA was heard on 9800 kHz on June 6th from the sign-on at 1525 to the sign-off at 1559 UTC in Russian. SIO rating was 554. Talk program by a male announcer and music were on the air. ID was given at 1528. Finally, Japan Shortwave Club will issue the QSL cards for the correct reports on a segment of WaveScan program. We are issuing QSL card by email to the report sent by email. Our address for your email report is jswcqsl@live.jp. I repeat, jswcqsl@live.jp. We continue to issue the printed QSL card by the same system as before. Your report should be addressed to JSWC P.O. Box 44, Kamakura, which is KAMAKURA, postal code 248-8691, Japan. One ILC or $2 for return postage will be appreciated. For this edition of DX Report, we'd like to thank Mr. Yoshiaki Hayashi, Mr. Iwao Nagatani, Mr. Chiaki Shimada, and Mr. Kazuaki Oikawa for sharing the information with us. Thank you for listening, and please join us for our next edition of DX Report of Japan Shortwave Club.
WaveScan this week with some Spanish guitar music. Thanks for listening to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week, the SS Malolo and Captain Dobzy and our Philippine DX report. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.